This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the play on the show.
As far as sports apologies go, this is one of the worst I've seen. And I guess what I'm puzzled with is that you've got a billion-dollar business that has had weeks to think about how it's going to respond to questions regarding the report and conclusion of Major League Baseball that its players organized the stealing of signs through video, transmitting them by hitting trash cans. And the best that they came up after all of that time and all of that money, here was the result. This is the end result of that, is their billionaire owner.
Listen, the Yankees have had a few comments out there. Our opinion is, that this didn't impact the game. We had a good team. We won the World Series, and we'll leave it at that.
It's really just...
How could that series of words come out of his mouth?
It's mind-boggling. Dude, you fired your GM, you fired your manager. Why would you have done either of those things if you didn't think it had any kind of impact? If you didn't think it had an impact, you wouldn't care about this. You would still have them employed by your team, and you would be waiting until next year for them both to return.
There's a fair amount of history of people, and we've thought of different scandals and how people went about apologizing. Baseball steroids is probably, I would say that this is the biggest scandal since the use of steroids in baseball. And Jim Crane's apology wasn't as bad as what Rafael Palmeiro did in front of Congress.
My name is Rafael Palmeiro, and I am a professional baseball player. Let me start by telling you this. I have never used steroids today.
Well, now, if you say that like that, if you say that definitively, and you actually did, like, you're going to be in a whole world of hurt. You're basically never going to be able. And Lance Armstrong is currently dealing with this. It's not that Lance Armstrong cheated. It's that Lance Armstrong was indignant about being accused of cheating after he cheated.
How do you lie with that kind of conviction? I mean, he might have been right. Rafael Palmeiro did not take steroids that specific day when he went to Congress. He didn't want to look all beefy and veiny in front of the people that were interrogating him. So maybe he was telling the truth in a way.
It's not an apology. It's not a lie if you actually believe it.
Right.
George Costanza approach.
Yeah,
bald-faced lie is a bad way to go. Yep. Like, you're never gonna get, because if you're found out, you're never gonna dig out of that hole. Like, it's just everybody is going to hate you, and not only that, but you're gonna get mocked for it.
No one will ever believe you again.
What about if you look like you're an unfrozen caveman, and you coach football, and you get caught, well, among various other things, videotaping the signals opposing coaches are using on the sideline, like, I don't know, one Bill Belichick did.
I never told anybody to tell him that. All I can tell you is what the facts are. You look at the tape, you see him filming the game, you tell me how discreet it is.
But, Bill, you had gotten that memo. I mean, you couldn't be any more clearer than 2006.
I made a mistake. I was wrong. I was wrong.
I hear remorse there. I hear a lot of remorse.
You know what
Sounds
I hear?
Sounds like indignation to me.
You got me on a technicality. Fine, I was wrong. And they're using this to... They're trying to hang me on this charge? They're trying to hang me on this?
Listen, he misinterpreted the rules. He just put the cameras in the wrong spot. No big deal. Come on.
And Bill Belichick, for all of the different faults that you'll say, the one thing that he does is I don't think he cares about how people describe him or talk about him. I don't think he cares about being kind of loathed publicly, where I think most people, that's the exception. I think the reason most people apologize, I think the reason that the Astros had that whole thing today, is that everyone's uncomfortable with being loathed.
That happened 12 years ago. Do you think he was more sensitive to it then than he is maybe now? Because I'm sure now he really doesn't care. I mean, he has entered essentially into the later stage in life where, you know, old guys tend to just not care about anything. The filter starts to slowly wear away. But I wonder then how he felt in that situation, because that was, I think, the first time where people were looking at him as if he was a bad guy, as opposed to just a coach of a really successful football team that was grumpy.
See, I think that the experience in Cleveland, I think Bill Belichick gradually came to utterly disregard what anyone thought about what he did. And it started in Cleveland, where he ended up being loathed and criticized, and he benched Bernie Kosar, and he was made fun of wearing a poncho on the sidelines, and he was basically run out of town as being incompetent. And then he gets to New England, and he wins a championship. And then what is it? Is it 2 years later, after they've traded Drew Bledsoe to Buffalo, Lawyer Malloy gets cut, goes to Buffalo, and
actually,
Buffalo wins
season.
This.
Yeah.
Is it? It's the next season.
Very
in
next
week
season.
Two, and they get routed. The Bills rout them in week two, and Tom Jackson that night on NFL primetime declares this team hates its coach. He says this team hates its coach.
He still hasn't forgiven Tom Jackson.
That part of it was he's like, no matter what I do, people are going to loathe me. And that was where the heel turn started, where he's like, I do not care what you'll think. Another apology closer to home. And, well, I would say that this one's probably closer for me as well, because I don't really want to hear this guy say anything about what he did. And saying sorry isn't going to help in the slightest is Howard Schultz.
I think sports fans have a deep level of commitment, almost a religious experience with their sports teams. And I understand that. I have a similar feeling with the team, with the Yankees that I grew up with my dad. So I understand if people can't get over it. I'm doing everything I can to talk about it openly and honestly, and I apologize.
Stop talking. Lost
Don't me. Drop the Yankees while you're talking about
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
He's being earnest. He's talking about it. He's kind of acknowledging that we're not going to forgive him. And there's part of me that's like, you're right. We're not going to forgive you. Because you were so weak-willed and you lacked a spine and you were unable to stand tall and ask for something that you wanted. And the first sign of turbulence, you sold a team that you previously characterized as a public trust, and saying sorry doesn't get you off the hook. Saying sorry doesn't get you off the hook. So in those sort of things of like, okay, fine. Hey, maybe that helps you go on about your day. And I got great satisfaction in the fact that his run for president never got off the ground. I thought that was awesome. I thought that was fantastic.
Did this happen during his run?
Wasn't this the lead up to it?
He was trying to apologize to Seattle to win them over, and that's how he did it.
Yep. Was by saying, I'm sorry. I regret what happened. He'd always attach a but to it. Like, he would always attach a but to the city. You can't, an apology doesn't come with a but. You don't put the but the city council, but the situation wasn't understood. An apology doesn't come with a but. But maybe there's sometimes an apology just isn't enough.
There's legitimately no apology for that. At that point, honestly, you should just not talk to anyone again regarding that. Like, go with the Bud Adams approach with the Oilers moving to Tennessee, or the Art Modell approach moving the Browns to Baltimore to become the Ravens. Like, you just don't talk. You're only going to inflame things specifically in that situation. I wonder, Danny, going forward, what can a sports apology for something like this actually accomplish? What would it actually do outside of potentially make your conscience feel at ease? If you're in the situation that some of these guys we played the audio from, or you're in Jim Crane's situation, like, I just have a hard time seeing anything coming of it. And I hate to say that, because I would like it to be where if you apologize, it's heartfelt. Someone's going to say, listen, it really hurt what you did, but at least you feel guilty about it. At least you feel bad for where you've put me. But I don't think that we have that capacity the same way we used to a couple of years back. Maybe even only, I feel like it's flipped. It's changed. Maybe it's social media. I don't know what it is, but it's different now.
Here's the key to apologizing. It's vulnerability. Like, the actual and a worthwhile apology is vulnerable. And it is acknowledging that you might not be forgiven. It's honestly acknowledging the thing you wish you had done differently. And it's sort of turning it over to the person of saying, hey, you make of this what you will. I'd like to try and remedy this in whichever way possible. And let me know how you'd like to proceed. And the reality is that especially when we're talking about public figures and something as sort of vague as fandom and what that means, people are very reluctant, especially people who have had control and not been told no before, to become that vulnerable. To say, Jim Crane, what he could have said today is, look, I'm embarrassed by some of the things that have happened in this organization. It doesn't mean that I'm embarrassed by my players, but I'm embarrassed by this. And I think that as a group, all of us in the Astros could have been better, and there are some people that took actions that have embarrassed us all. I'm going to do everything I can to make sure it never happens again. I understand that our team's accomplishments are going to be viewed with suspicion and anger by some people, and that's the result of our actions. I'm sorry. I'm going to spend the rest of my time as an owner making sure this never happens again, and that's all I can say. And nobody's willing to do those sort of things because you're turning over control of it. You're saying, like, that's the end of it. I don't care. You don't get to say when it ends. I mean, honestly, that's part of it, is like you actually don't have control of how people feel about you and your team. And acknowledging or giving up that sort of chance to control it is paralyzing for most people.
It is. And I also think now people have gotten to a point where, I don't know, maybe it's from watching movies, it's from watching TV. They feel entitled to a sense of retribution in some way, shape, or form. Vengeance, even. And that's why people aren't forgiving Jim Crane for today. I feel like they don't think that enough happened.
Yeah, there's some of that, but there's also the point is that we've become so soft and sensitive that we want everybody to like us, and almost by that's impossible to happen, especially now with everybody has more opportunities to voice their own opinion, and we've become angry. Like, no, you don't have the right to not like me. You absolutely have the right to not like me. It doesn't mean that you're justified in that or that I need to let that paralyze me, but we're so uncomfortable with that sort of the idea of haters. Like, you're just a hater. Well, yeah, there's been haters throughout all the time. Now haters just have a megaphone, whether it's through
Johnson.
Twitter and those sort of things. Yeah, the player haters, Paul, there have always been that. You now hear it more. And if you fixate on that and just be like, I only want people to like me, well, then you're going to have things like today where you try to justify and explain to people why you should still like me. There's a lot of people that aren't going to like the Astros, and they're not going to like any Astros player, and they might not have liked them before when they were just winning and good, and now that they know that they cheated, they're really not going to like them. You can't win that person over, and you have to accept the reality of that.
Yeah, and I mean, that, you know, that's one of the reasons Patriots fans can be so insufferable, is that they still cannot get it into their head that people don't like them because of the winning and because of the scandals that they have been attached to, at least two. So you can't change people's minds, and an apology is not necessarily going. Let's be honest, apology is just not going to do it. Period. It's not. You want it to, but that's what I feel like, Danny. What you're just bringing up was the entire premise of the Astros press conference today, was that they want some people to like them, and I guarantee you that zero of the people, 0%, perhaps even negative percent of the people that heard that press conference that dislike the Astros are like, you know what, I like that Jim Crane guy. Unless they're laughing at him. And they're like,
you know what everybody says?
It's hilarious.
You know what? I liked the way that Jim Crane press conference ended when Marley Rivera came straight for his neck.
So how is it that it doesn't affect competition? So then what are you guys apologizing for?
We're apologizing because we broke the rules.
But isn't sign stealing a distinct advantage for the hitter? So doesn't it automatically impact competition?
It could possibly do that. It could possibly not.
Okay, guys, we're going to wrap up. Thank you, Dusty. Thank you, Jim.
It could possibly not.
It's time for us to go around the NFL.
It's time to go around the NFL. Brought to you by Toyota of Puyallup. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
Hey, Jess.
Yes?
I'm sorry.
Why?
We spent all of today talking about apologies, and it feels like maybe we should have spent more time talking about the Seahawks, and I understand
sorry.
You might never forgive me for that, but I'm sorry.
That was a well-constructed apology, Danny. That's how it's done.
I didn't hear remorse.
All of the listeners out there, I'm sorry that I cackle like a hopped-up witch. If I could change my laugh, I would. It's natural, and, well, I'm just sorry. And if you hate me and don't listen to the program, I understand.
That's a smarmy and sarcastic apology. Flag!
I would like to thank the Houston Astros for their candor today because it gave us 3 hours of greatness. But it's time to go around the NFL a little bit, take a little bit of a break from that horrendous press conference. Jameis Winston, after throwing 30 interceptions in one season, finally decides maybe he'll do something about it and undergoes LASIK surgery.
About time.
Why would you let anybody know this?
But this, like, has been
honestly, why would you let anyone know this?
Because Danny, it's been a rumor going around the NFL for like over a year that he's got horrible vision, and I think that when he played baseball, he actually wore glasses, and for whatever reason, when he plays football, he doesn't. So, put two and two together, and the guy has talent. Like, he throws a ton of interceptions, he's very careless with the football, and he might not be the smartest guy that's playing that position, but he's a talented quarterback. You don't throw for that many yards. You don't throw for that many touchdowns if you're a nobody. He's got to be better though with some of the decisions that he's making. And I honestly think that with better vision, yeah, he could be better.
He's going to be a free agent, and his marketing plan this offseason when he got together is like, let's go get my eyes fixed. That'll make me more sellable.
Remember people? Do you remember Casey Kochman? This was driving me nuts last night because I couldn't remember. He came here in 2010 to the Mariners, and he came along with some other guys, like Sean Fagans was in that group, and they were supposed to be good, and then they completely failed. And Casey Kochman left for the Angels, I believe, or when he left, he got off-season LASIK surgery and all of a sudden was hitting at like all-star level as soon as he departed from the Mariners. Like, yeah. You kidding?
Yeah. Jermaine Kearse had LASIK. And I love Jermaine Kearse. And Jermaine Kearse got a bad rap in college, and he got a bad rap with the Seahawks for the number of passes that he dropped. Like, there is no guy who has played for his hometown college and his hometown NFL team who has done more and took on more flack. And he gets LASIK, and he makes a couple tough catches. And everybody's like, oh, see, his eyes are fixed. That's why. And I remember talking to him about it, and he's like, I don't know what to say. Thanks? Like, whatever. It's like, you can't win in that one.
Here's a story from 2013, and Jameis Winston, per Jimbo Fisher, has contacts but doesn't like wearing them. He has a very minimal prescription, I guess. Jimbo sounds like he's a little annoyed there. It's just at night he has a hard time with the lights sometimes.
I like Bruce Arians' quote from this year, too. He can see the scoreboard. Or he can't see the scoreboard, but he can see most of the guys in front of him, so that's cool. Oh, okay.
There might be a problem. Just a little bit of one. Only a quarterback.
Well, unfortunately for Ohio residents, the state medical board ruled that being a fan of the Browns and or Bengals is not a condition that would allow one to buy medicinal marijuana.
It should be.
It's pretty funny.
Say it, Danny.
It was a blunt question.
Keep going.
Did they release a joint decision?
Damn it. I didn't want to laugh at that one.
Do they require that all Browns-Bengals games be played on grass from here on out?
Dang it. You're making me laugh. These are terrible.
I'm just glad that everybody could get into a courthouse and hash this out.
Oh, my God.
Well, that plan went up in smoke.
Should I just walk
that plan
out of the
is
studio?
Total cash.
Bye.
Can't get no shakes. The Bengals are willing to work on an Andy Dalton trade. Where do you think he could land if they do so?
I think Andy Dalton would make sense in Oakland. Or excuse me,
oh,
Las
really?
Vegas. Las Vegas. Look.
Oh, you think he can handle Gruden?
He's got no choice but to. I mean, he's not going to be playing in Cincinnati. He seems like a very affable fellow. I don't know if that's because of his red hair, but he seems like someone that is the kind of reclamation project that John Gruden would love. And worst case scenario, there's extra competition for Derek Carr, who has been whining and whining all offseason. And the last last two seasons, since John Gruden's taken charge, about all these stories about how he might not be the quarterback of the future in Vegas. Okay, well, how about he actually has to prove it? Because there's nothing that has happened over the last couple of seasons that has proved that he should be their starting quarterback and have that right basically given to him as if he is anointed by the gods of some sort.
He's a redheaded quarterback. He deserves to go to a redheaded stepchild of a franchise. He'll be a Charger.
With a redheaded owner? Oh, okay.
No,
go to Mark Davis.
No. The Chargers are the redheaded stepchild. Like, they're sharing somebody else. They're using somebody else's.
Yeah,
they're using somebody else's. Was it a higher court that presided on the medicinal marijuana thing? Do you think it's been a chronic situation?
Whatever it takes. Let's get it. Playmakers on three. 1, 2, 3.
Playmakers.
Sorry, just had to get that inspiring
that
speech
Dalton.
In there.
Dalton to Indy. I could see that.
You know, the sad thing is, like, as bad as that Andy Dalton speech was, it's not as bad as J.J. Watt, like, trying to throw shade at him after beating him in Monday Night Football. We just made the red rifle look like a red B
BB gun or something. Yeah,
that one was bad.
Ooh, that was terrible. Bad. The Falcons are considering parting ways with Devonta Freeman.
Running backs are replaceable, though. And has he been the same guy over the last couple of seasons?
He's played 16 games in the last two seasons.
Yeah. Like, sometimes the injuries just hit you, and that's it. And it's unfortunate. That was what a combination the Falcons had at running back under Kyle Shanahan with Freeman and Tevin Coleman, both of whom were awesome. And in addition to that, Matt Ryan basically
they
setting
kept the wrong
bar.
One, right? The Tevin Coleman's been better, right?
I think so, but Tevin Coleman's also in a situation in San Francisco where he's
that's
with
true.
Kyle
he's not
Shanahan
even starting,
again.
And Raheem Mostert was getting one.
Right. So I don't necessarily know that, but Tevin Coleman is the last one standing. Coleman's a much better receiver out of the backfield, and Coleman seems like a lot more of a running back that will last into the future as opposed to someone like Freeman, who I think at this point might be just one of those big-bodied guys that you hope can win in short yardage situations, especially if he's not being able to play a full season.
Lions brass is adamant that Matt Stafford is not up on the trading block.
Yeah, he shouldn't be, because they're at the point where they should have a successor to him, and that's what they should be looking for. You don't need to move on from Stafford until you get the guy in the pipeline and line him up.
It's also hard to put a guy with a broken back on the trade block. Hey, do you want our injured quarterback? It's only like $100 million salary. His back, it's only kind of broken. It's not completely broken. He can still sort of move.
How would you try to sell that to your fan base if you were the one acquiring the guy with the broken back? Would you be like, hey, look, we got a really good deal on him because he was an as-is quarterback?
Well, if you were to make a press release, the PR team would have a field day with the statistics that Matt Stafford has put up. Because there are a lot of statistics that he's actually, like, towards the top in NFL history in terms of. Like, he's pretty high on the leaderboard in a lot of conversations.
Yeah, just ask Andy Benoit. He would take him over Russell Wilson any day of the week.
Oh, that's bad.
Yeah, that was a bad one.
I broke my back.
What do you mean by that?
Your back is broken.
What, a vertebrae or what portion?
Spinal.
It'll never get old for me. A couple texts that came in. The first one is that I should apologize for my hatred of everything Oregon. Nope, bridge too far. Won't ever be apologizing for that at all. And then people pointing out that all my weed puns have been used over and over and over and over again. Yes, that's correct. It's Danny and Gallant.
It to the ground.
That's correct, and I'm not apologizing for that either. We'll talk more about Astros' apologies and the proper punishment for the team next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Brandon Gustafson, one of our reporters on 710sports.com, had made the point that Alex Bregman showed more contrition when it came to flipping a bat in the World Series than he showed when asked to talk about his role or the statement that he released regarding his role and the team's actions in the sign-stealing scandal.
Well, I mean, one thing is more serious than the other. I mean, bat flips, fun? Anything like that in baseball?
Bat flips are taken very, very seriously by the people.
You have to be shot when you flip your bat. 100%.
That's one of the things that's kind of, I don't know if it's a contradiction, but it's weird what baseball players get hung up on and what the sport of baseball gets hung up on and how hard it is to talk about things that are actually overarching problems in the game. Here's Alex Bregman's statement that he read today.
I'm really sorry about the choices that were made by my team, by the organization, and by me. I've learned from this, and I hope to regain the trust of baseball fans. I would also like to thank the Astros fans for all of their support. We as a team are totally focused on moving forward to the 2020 season. Thank you.
Now let's contrast that with the apology after the bat flip in the World Series.
I just let my emotions get the best of me. It's not how I was raised to play the game, and I just let my emotions get the best of me, and I'm sorry for doing that.
Reading a statement never holds weight. It just doesn't. It doesn't sound authentic. And when you're speaking like three words at a time and saying, "I regret to tell you that I cheated the Dodgers and Yankees of championships." Like, I'm sorry. I feel like I'm hearing either a robot speak or I'm hearing somebody that had someone write something for him. Where with the latter one, and I don't know why he was apologizing for that. That is so off brand for Alex Bregman to apologize for a bat flip of all things. I thought it was embarrassing, in fact, that he apologized for the bat flip. Dude, you're Alex Bregman. You're the guy who doesn't care about any of those things.
But you're violating one of baseball's unwritten rules. But also, cheating is violating one of the written and unwritten rules, as you've seen all the players react to it.
Well, Lydia, a unwritten rule is more important than a written rule, and that's what we've learned from baseball.
Yeah, and isn't cheating like part of that unwritten rule? Like, hey, don't take money out of my pocket, don't mess with my stats, don't mess with my legacy, as you've seen all of the players react to it.
Which, that's the interesting part to me, and I think that what we'll find out is how pervasive it is based on how much antagonism is pointed directly at the Astros. And how much they were sort of, whether it was the tip of the iceberg or the most egregious example. I'll be interested to see how people treat the Astros team and specifically the star players for there. Jim Crane, the Astros owner, when he wasn't saying it didn't really matter, was asked why the players are being absolved.
Well, the commission report was very thorough, and they did a lot of work on it. Where the commissioner came down, which I agree with him, is that it could have been stopped. And it wasn't stopped, and people had knowledge of it based upon the report. So we hold those two guys accountable for what happened and not stopping that action.
That's really weird. That's a really weird statement to say that players are adults. They're grown men. They're professionals. They're millionaires. And saying the people we hold accountable were the people that didn't stop them. That's exceptionally weird. Like, that is a mind meld sort of thing. And I get why, which is that they would have a huge union grievance if they fired players. And they would have the issue of those are guys they're still going to want to market going forward. There's that self-interest that's here for this team that just lurks in the background. They fired the GM isn't disposable, but he's also not front and center. And they were able to get a really smart guy to come in and run the team. They fired two very disposable pieces.
The part about the report, though, that suggests that it was a player-run cheating scandal where Carlos Beltran was spearheading it and Alex Cora was helping it and A.J. Hinch was not a fan of it but didn't really do much about it, should mean that someone that's a player faces accountability. And to pin it all on Carlos Beltran, like some have been doing as well, is just not getting to the bottom of it. Why should, Danny, the players' union defend some of these guys out? Also, I mean, shouldn't they be the outliers that don't get the defense of the players' union when they are hurting the monetary gains of other players in said union based off of what they have done to that pitcher like fella McFellapants from the Blue Jays who got absolutely shelled by the Astros in that one inning, who is now suing the Astros, Bolsinger. I mean, those people, they should defend those people, not the Astros players who cheated.
I agree with you. Here's the problem and the reason the Players Association, you can't trust Major League Baseball or the employers to wield that punishment fairly. If you let them punish and just say, okay, we all agree these guys are dirtbags, you end up giving them license to extend that power and do that to more questionable things in areas where you would actually have a defense. Leagues and teams can't be trusted, like when it comes to fairly punishing people, because what they'll start doing is using punishments. We saw it with Josh Hamilton, right? Like where there was an attempt to get out of the contract that he was owed by a team because of his drug problem. Like, there was an attempt, the Angels attempted to nullify part of his contract because he was using drugs. You're like, okay, you signed the contract, and now you want out of it because the guy, no, you made the promise, and you've kind of got to live by the promise. You can't trust teams. That would be my short answer, but you're right. Like, should they be defended? And no, oh, man, they committed a pretty, and if you argued about the fairness for their entire constituency, maybe some of those Astros players should be hung out to dry.
There are a lot of things that don't make sense to me in all of this, that the players union wouldn't necessarily turn on their own when their own clearly are the ones at fault here. And also just the idea that this was something that everyone knew about and no one did anything about. And that's something that we've gotten over the last couple of days. This was a well-known secret across baseball that the Astros were doing this, and I'm sure that other teams were doing this as well. And everyone just said to themselves, well, all right, we're just going to play through it. It's bizarre to me. And it goes just the culture of baseball, where that's something that has been sort of just looked the other way upon, cheating, for its entire existence.
Jim Crane was asked whether he wants to see other teams that have been accused of doing similar things. I know there's been issues and things raised a while ago about the Blue Jays doing it, whether it's the Yankees, whether it was the Red Sox and the Apple Watches. He was asked if he wants to see the league come down hard on them.
Listen, we're staying focused on the Astros. It's not my job to deal with those other teams. I'm sure the commissioner will handle that appropriately. We're glad to, you know, if this is silver lining here, we're glad to get this behind us and get spring training started. And we feel very fortunate to have Dusty and James Click here.
Do you think he thought that was going to work? We're very fortunate. The silver lining here is we're going to turn the page. We're calling a press conference to turn the page.
That's why they brought Dusty Baker to the press conference. I think they legitimately thought that people would actually be interested in Dusty Baker being the new manager of the team. No one cares
at all. And Dusty's cool. Dusty's super cool. I love Dusty Baker. No one cares about him up there. We're fortunate to be able to turn the page. That was a talking point for Major League Baseball. Like, that's what Major League... Don't talk about what other people did. Don't try and... Because Major League Baseball, their interest in it is making this go away as quickly as possible, which is why you have alternative playoff formats being floated, which is, can you talk about something other than the fact that the best team over the past 3 years had a very organized system of cheating?
Right. And I mean, I actually saw something that just got tweeted out like 6 minutes ago. Like, baseball commissioner Rob Manfred just announced an additional $1 million to go to the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. It's a joint gift from the baseball and the MLB Players Association. How many press releases can you put out in the wake of this, before it and afterwards, to distract people? I'm actually curious. I want more. I want more of these gestures from Rob Manfred.
They still have to rule in the case of the Boston Red Sox, too. So if they wanted to expedite that investigation, because it's going to come up all over again whenever that comes out as well.
Do you think they'll release it? I almost wonder if they think that it's all just over now. That's honestly how I think I would approach it if I'm baseball. I'm like, all right, well, everyone lost their minds over this. How are they going to handle a Boston team that's won 4 championships in the last like 15 years doing something similar?
Well, it's almost like they decided that they were going to have the manager who was in charge of it. He's conveniently stepped away, and the Red Sox are taking a step back this season, so they won't matter as much.
Hmm. It's bizarre, man. I just don't get how they got to this point. I really don't, and thought that this is all going to go away from some event that they hold today.
We're turning the page, Paul. We're going to turn the page and raise flags next here on Danny and Gallant.
From the pocket, and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
It is Danny and Gallant. It's time for us to address everything that has occurred. This subject is already boring. What are they supposed to do? 3 question marks from the 206. Apologize every game all year, over and over? 2 question marks. Move on. Yeah, I think they should apologize. Like, before, when the lineup cards are introduced, like, they go and get the mic and grab it, and Dusty Baker says, we'd like to take this time to apologize to absolutely no one.
That would be really
funny. Revenge Tour 2020.
Or they could, you know, go the Catholic route. I remember when I first started doing confession, and you would admit to, like, some of the things you've done, and every now and then you would admit to things that probably would have merited more than just saying the same prayer, like, 40 times. But that would be pretty funny if they just had to sit there and, like, basically recite the act of contrition and pray a bunch of times in front of everybody. It's the Catholic way.
Here's 162 beads. Go.
Rosary beads. Nice.
Nobody does guilt like the Catholics do guilt. I'll tell you that.
Can confirm.
Ingrained in there.
Yeah, it's with you for life.
I'm going to start by throwing a flag against the Houston Astros because we had a great show planned. I was going to fix sports. I was a little bit bored yesterday waiting to find out whether Greg Olson was going to sign. So I took a good, 20 minutes and fixed all the sports. And I'll give you just a hint. It was to change every sport in the Olympics so it included rifle shooting. Like it's the biathlon. The biathlon is cross-country skiing and shooting, which in Scandinavian countries or Finland or somewhere like that is essentially called shopping. Like, hey, I'm going to go down to the market and go cross-country ski for a while and shoot something.
What a disparate set of skills. Like, is it because you would hunt while cross-country skiing back in the day? Is that it? Because in modern times, it seems just like, how'd you pair those two together?
Yeah, well, you don't go to the 7-Eleven in Finland without getting on a pair of cross-country skis. And sometimes it's close, so you got to shoot a bunny rabbit or something.
Is there also, like, snowshoeing and shooting? Do we get,
that's true.
Footwear?
Well, see, that's what I want. Lydia, that's what I want, is to pair shooting with everything.
Okay, we got it.
So it'd be volleyball, and you play, and between sets, you would have rifle shooting. Or you play baseball, and between innings, you'd have rifle shooting. You'd run the 100 meters, and then have rifle shooting.
Didn't take you for Charlton Heston, but here we are.
Would it always be, like, from the ground, like they do, or you would mix it up?
You'd get bonus points if you do it gangster style, where you take the pistol and turn it sideways.
You know, gymnastics would get really interesting.
Whoa.
Or rhythmic gymnastics and shooting. Yeah. And then you could have great, like, you could have cross-disciplinary competitions, like which athletes tend to be the best shooters.
Only in America.
Fantastic. Yeah. So anyway, I didn't get a chance to forward all my great ideas like that one because of the stupid Astros bad apology.
We'll get to it tomorrow.
Oh, somebody says a very famous comedian already has a skit about the shooting sports. Too late. That's
Listen,
disappointing.
Here's the thing. Everything's
I
been
stole
done
it
before.
From somebody.
Yeah, you stole that. Can we hear your apology?
somebody says it's Seinfeld.
Oh, you should have done it. Should have done it in Seinfeld voice. What's the deal with all these sports that don't have any guns in them?
If you don't know that you were stealing it from someone, is it still stealing? Okay. Anyway, I'm going to bow out now. Throw a flag on myself. Joke theft, Lydia.
Yeah, I'm going to throw... Are we all throwing flags in the Astros in some capacity?
Sure.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, I would say... You know what? I'll single out Justin Verlander in particular. They didn't trot him up on the stage there. He was vocal. Somebody was even retweeting a quote from 2017 when he was very vocal about sign stealing, I think before he went to the Astros, but said in the clubhouse this morning that he should have been more vocal in saying that this was wrong. Although he also called it's been really terrible and really hard for him, as if, you know, this has really been a struggle for him. Aww. What about all those other pitchers out there who had their numbers inflated and messed with and money taken out of their pockets? How do you feel about that, Verlander? So the guy who's vocal about just about everything, I was sad we didn't get to hear more from him.
Yeah, I would have really liked to hear his piousness weighing in on this. Especially seeing as he gave up, six runs, like, right before he got traded from the Tigers to the Astros while he was in Detroit? Huh. Interesting, Justin.
Jessamine?
Yes. This is also going to be related. I'm going to raise a flag, though, for Marley Rivera, who just basically shut down the end of that press conference, but in just fantastic fashion.
So how is it that it doesn't affect competition? So then what are you guys apologizing for?
We're apologizing because we broke the rules.
But isn't sign stealing a distinct advantage for the hitter, so doesn't it automatically impact competition?
It could possibly do that. It could possibly not.
Okay, guys, we're going to wrap up. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Jim.
I'm going to take that
You forced
forward.
Them to end it. Marley, you're awesome.
Yep.
The 408 texted in #, let that reporter cook.
I like it.
There's got to be a role for someone that's that good of a questioner in politics, right? Like someone that can do that, have that sort of power. I'm so envious. Like she was able to end an entire farce of a press conference by pointing out the lunacy with two very simple, straightforward questions.
I think I'm going to use that line in a lot of my sports takes going forward. You know, it could affect it. Could not. See, that's just, I'll just waffle. I'll just walk on that fence. I'm very curious as to how the next Astros press conference is going to go down. The one for, you know, Jim Crane's funeral after he died in that moment right there. R.I.P.
I just got in my head the sound of Jim Moore asking the same question that Marley Rivera did, which, if Moore was in charge of asking it, would have been delivered to someone like, "What I don't understand is, why were you stealing the signs if it wasn't going to help anybody? Can you explain that to me?" At which point Jim Crane probably would have charged off of the stage and tried to go straight for Jim Moore's credential.
That would be par for the course for people's reactions to Jim.
Jim calls that Tuesday. Paul.
I'm going to throw a challenge flag at PR teams across North American sports going forward. Apologies will clear your conscience, but if you hold a press conference that is saying you're sorry, it is going to go very, very, very badly for you. In fact, there's nothing good that can come from it. And it's a shame that we are now in a place where no one is going to forgive you for things that you do when you admit that you were wrong. But in the case of this, it's understandable, and I just don't know what they were thinking trotting Jim Crane out there. And now Jim Crane got pantsed on national television by multiple reporters, especially at the very end of that press conference. And at this point, like, you're going to have to just live in this misery pit for the rest of the year.
It's going to be awesome.
This was really fun today.
I
get to play
time.
The Astros so many times, too. This is going to be so entertaining. The sound.
Bring it all back. Single time.
Buy some small trash cans, because guess what, guys? Every single Astros Mariners game, I think we need to bring trash cans to the ballpark.
One of the very best baseball books is called Bang the Drum Slowly. It was made into a movie that's a fantastic movie as well. Like, I bawled my eyes out when I read that book, which was like last year. Bang the Trash Can Slowly will be the name of this sad, sad Astros season. It's going to be glorious. That's going to do it for us. We would like to thank Jessamyn McIntyre and Lydia Cruz for keeping this all on the road. We would like to sincerely and offer heartfelt thanks to the Houston Astros PR team for failing to prepare anything better and giving us content for 3 hours. Yeah. He's Paul Gallant, and he's going to be banging on trash cans for the next season.
100%. And he's Danny O'Neill, and I think he wants some validation and some confirmation that he can hold a rifle while he is hosting a sports talk show. So long. Farewell.
You better be careful where I point that rifle after that sort of thing.
Please don't point it at me, and we'll see you tomorrow.
It was just so much fun.